Hello there. I'm just coming on before the episode to let you know that as well as talking about the therapeutic benefits of knitting with my guest Fegan Murray, she also speaks about losing her son Martin Hett in the Manchester Arena bombing, as well as her work as a psychotherapist and some of the mental health issues she came across in her work. If you think you may find issues within the episode upsetting, please do give it a miss. This is Making Stitches, and this time I'm sharing the story of a remarkable woman who, after losing her son in the Manchester Arena bombing in 2017, now works to prevent terrorism by forging peace and understanding amongst communities, both by speaking out about the dangers of radicalisation and by knitting peace bears. This is Fegan Murray, a former psychotherapist turned peace campaigner and a passionate knitter.
I had a condition that I didn't recognise needs is a medical emergency, and as a consequence, I lost 60% of my hearing on my left ear, which as a then therapist devastated me. And I at the time thought, well, as a therapist, you always tell your depressed clients, get creative, it's good for your soul. And I thought, well, I'll do that myself, I'll see if it helps. And I started knitting bears. And oh my goodness, it absolutely was my saviour. It completely calmed me down. It completely took me to another zone in the head. And it was so therapeutic. However, when Martin then died, I actually found that knitting my bears really helps me with my grieving in many different ways, not just the knitting, but what I do with the bears afterwards as well.
Hello and welcome to Making Stitches. I'm Lindsay. Thank you very much for listening today. Since the last episode, we've begun a new year, and although it's very much a time for new beginnings and looking to the future, this is actually the final episode of Making Stitches in this series. I'll be back again later in the year with more creative chats, but I wanted to end the series on a high, and I thought this inspirational chat I had just before Christmas with Fegan Murray would be perfect. For those of you who haven't come across Fegan before, allow me to share a little bit about her life. Fegan, a mother of five, was working as a psychotherapist in Greater Manchester in 2017 when her son Martin Hett was one of 22 people killed in the Manchester Arena attack. Since then, her life has taken a completely different direction. After publicly forgiving the bomber, she chose to work to forge peace and understanding in communities, especially among young people, in a bid to break what she describes as the cycle of hate. Fegan graduated with a master's degree in counter-terrorism from the University of Central Lancashire last month and was made an OBE in this year's New Year's Honours. She's also campaigned for a change in legislation governing security measures at entertainment venues called Martin's Law, which has been in the news here in the UK this week. I spoke to Fegan late last year, before the news of her OBE broke and before her graduation, and I'm really grateful that she chose to speak to me about her work and the healing powers of knitting. She began by taking me back to life before Martin was killed.
About 4.5 years ago, I had a very ordinary, bog-standard normal life, going about my business, working as a psychotherapist, knitting for fun and relaxation, and actually for my mental health as well at the time. That's how I started knitting, but I'll go into that a little bit later. So I had a full-time job as a private practitioner. I had five kids who were all growing up. Most of them had moved out and set up their own lives. I had two young daughters still at home with me 5 years ago. And everything was going okay. We were about to downsize because I didn't need a huge big house anymore. as the numbers of people were reducing. So we were about to move to a smaller house, into a quieter area, and life was going to be okay. And then on 22nd of May 2017, the most horrific thing happened, and our life has not been the same. Certainly for me, my whole life has been turned upside down. Then my son Martin was killed at the Manchester Arena attack. He went there with a few of his friends. Thankfully, everybody's okay, but sadly, Martin never made it home that day. And since then, life has been quite different. So very sadly, I knew the day after he died that I will no longer be able to do my job as a psychotherapist. And the reason that got me into knitting was obviously my ears are my working tools as a therapist. And about 6 years ago, before Martin died, about a year before he died, I was sadly afflicted by a condition that happens to one in 20,000 people. I had a condition that I didn't recognise needs is a medical emergency, and as a consequence, I lost 60% of my hearing on my left ear, which as a then therapist devastated me. And I, at the time, thought, well, as a therapist, you always tell your depressed clients, get creative, it's good for your soul. And I thought, well, I'll do that myself, I'll see if it helps. And I started knitting bears. And oh my goodness, it absolutely was my savior. It completely calmed me down. It completely took me to another zone in the head. And it was so therapeutic. However, when Martin then died, I actually found that knitting my bears really helps me with my grieving in many different ways, not just the knitting, but what I do with the bears afterwards as well.
Well, see, I'm just so sorry for what your family's gone through. I can't comprehend it at all, and I'm really grateful that you've spoken so openly about it. You have not just through your bears, but I believe your life has changed quite dramatically, and you've completely changed your focus as a result of what you've gone through, and now are focusing on forgiveness and understanding and peace as a way to kind of make something positive come out of the terrible experience you've all been through.
Absolutely. Obviously, very sadly, I could not continue my job as a therapist because I felt it is unethical, to put it that way, for me to continue as a therapist then. In the corner of my mind, listening to people coming with any issue to me to try and get some help. If in the back of my mind, there's a tiny voice saying, for goodness sake, you're still alive, stop complaining and get on with your life. And I have to be honest, that would be there somewhere in my head. And therefore, I felt the most ethical and the correct decision was not to continue my job anymore because it wouldn't be fair on my clients. So, but as a consequence of what happened, I, as a therapist, I always used to tell my clients and my students when I was teaching the subject, when something happens, don't react immediately. Step back, take a huge step back, look at the bigger picture, as big as you can possibly look at it. And you will see many different angles and perspectives from that vantage point. And that's what I did at the time when Martin died. And about 3 weeks after it happened, and in the meantime, finding out how young the terrorist was, he was only 22, I felt that actually there's a bigger thing at play. It isn't just a young man strapping a rucksack with a massive bomb in killing people. There must be a reason why these people do these things. And I, until then, knew nothing about terrorism at all, and I did two things. So first of all, 3 weeks after the attack, I said to my husband, I want to go on national TV and publicly forgive the terrorists. I realized in all that fog that was happening at the time that there was a lot of anger in certainly in Greater Manchester, but in society because of what happened, as there were a lot of children who were killed that day alongside Martin. And I felt that I could, my voice could make a slight difference. And that doesn't mean to sound arrogant. I just felt, as a bereaved mum, I could actually make some kind of difference and make some people stop in their tracks and think. And that was one of the reasons I forgave and went public. But one of the main reasons I forgave was also I wanted to break the cycle of hate and anger. I wanted to forgive because I felt that I still need to continue as a mum, as a mother, to my other four children, but and grandmother to my grandkids, but also I needed to continue being a wife, a sister, a friend, all those other roles we play as human beings. And I felt if I succumbed to anger and hate, I would turn bitter inside and something would shrivel inside my soul, and I couldn't allow that to happen. However, at the same time, I thought, well, you know nothing about terrorism. And because it simply wasn't on my radar, I thought that sort of thing only happens in America and abroad and in London. And sadly, it happened to us. And that made me then think, okay, I need to learn about this. So I did a master's in counterterrorism that I completed in September. And I'm glad to say I passed it with distinction. I don't know how, but I did. But I now know a lot more about the whole topic. And I feel very, very much at peace with my decision to forgive.
Wow. Do you feel your background then in counselling and psychotherapy prepared you almost for what you would experience yourself?
Massively. I'm not religious, but I consider myself a spiritual and on some level. And I feel, looking back now, that the universe made me train the 2.5 decades ago not to just help people with all the stuff they brought to me, but to help me, to give me the skills to cope with what I had to cope with at the time of Martin's death.
And what do you do now then? I believe, you know, you go and speak to secondary school students about your experience and the importance of speaking out when you see something going on that shouldn't. Tell me a little bit about your day-to-day life now.
So the first year I did very little because I was obviously heavily grieving, but I had already then started my master's in counterterrorism. So I did very little in terms of going public, but I said all along that as soon as I am emotionally in a better place, I want to speak to young people. And the main reason was because the terrorist who did the arena attack was so young. And it got me thinking that actually, why would a young person who has no life experience, who doesn't really understand a lot of things in life yet, because of that lack of knowledge and awareness, why would young people do that? And I then realised, researching it a little bit, that there are people who get radicalised online and influenced by others, and that got me thinking, well, prevention surely has to be better than cure. So I felt I needed to go to schools, and I remember the day after the first anniversary of the attack, I came down to breakfast and I said to my husband, right, the anniversary is out of the way, I feel a lot different now, I feel ready to go and approach schools. And I started phoning schools, and that's how it all started. The reason why I go to secondary schools, because I feel that young people are quite vulnerable to being radicalised online. As we all know, a lot of young people spend an awful lot of time online. And recruiters sadly know that. So terrorism thrives on getting new recruits on board. They need fresh blood constantly. And the best way to recruit young people is online. The easiest way to recruit them is online. So I go to schools not just to warn children about the dangers of radicalization. I talk them through a list of platforms that terrorist recruiters operate on. I talk to them about the tactics they use, some of the stuff they might say to them. I show them a little government video that is actually only a minute and a half long that actually shows how a young person on a gaming platform is being recruited, because you can hear the voice of the recruiter. I show them who is vulnerable to being recruited and what sort of signs to look out for. And if they suspect that they themselves are in danger of being recruited, or a friend of theirs might be in danger, hopefully they're equipped to see the signs and know what to look out for after the talk, that they can get access, and I tell them how to get support and help. But that's not the only reason why I go to school. I also feel when I look at any news coverage, there's just so much hatred and horrible stuff going on. The world is not in great shape. And I always say to the young people that they actually are the future adults, and they can really make a difference for their future and their future generations on the kind of life they want to live. And because they are future policymakers, decision makers, lawmakers, but they are most importantly future parents. And that's when I talk about values such as tolerance, kindness, forgiveness, peace, unity, global compassion. I tell them not to fear difference, but embrace it as an enrichment to their own life. All those kinds of really important values. And I usually take an empty gift box with me, the size of a shoebox, and ask the school beforehand that every child should have a post-it note size of paper and pen with them. And I say to the children, before you leave this room, please put one act of kindness on this piece of paper that you are prepared to carry out today, and put it in the box. And then that box is then handed to the teaching staff, and I say, there you are, do a nice project with it. I was at a primary school last week and did exactly that. And they already had planned, because they knew what I was going to do with the children, that they're going to do a big tree with butterflies, and the butterflies have all these acts of kindness on them. So they are encouraging the children to be kinder to each other. So that kind of work is really important.
Absolutely. How incredible that you can turn something so dreadful into something that's so beautiful and full of hope and optimism for the next generation.
It's important because, as I said, they are the future adults. You know, we grown-ups have made a mess of things. I mean, you only have to look at the news 5 minutes to think, oh, my goodness, you know. But I genuinely believe that future generations can really make a difference. In fact, one of my daughters said she feels there's a lot of awakening in young people these days. And, yeah, I feel that is true, but why not encourage it more?
Absolutely. Now, can I take you back to your knitting now and back to your bears prior to that terrible chapter in your life? You were knitting bears, as you said, for your mental health. And you'd opened a shop online, and the sales weren't going too well until Martin stepped in. Tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, so I was knitting hearts. I was also making sewing. Occasionally, I get pain on my lower arm from knitting, so I have to take a week out of knitting, unfortunately. And in that week, I still need to be busy with my hands. So what I tend to do is sew vintage hearts. So I was trying to sell these online, the hearts and the bears, and nothing would happen. And I remember a friend of mine was doing a Christmas fair, and she said, oh, can we share a stall? You can do your bears and your hearts, and I'll sell Christmas stuff. And of course, her stuff was flying off the shelves because it was Christmas related. And mine was just, people said, oh, aren't they cute? Aren't they lovely? Nobody bought anything. So I was really bored, and I committed myself to 2 days of this Christmas fair. And I texted Martin saying, oh, for goodness sake, Martin, I'm here with my friend and nobody cares about any of the stuff I sell. You're constantly on Twitter. Can you not tweet or do something on social media to tell some of your friends to come buy something? And he put it on Twitter, and obviously it went viral. And I ended up with quite a shock, really, because not only did my then 30, 40 bears online sell out, but I ended up with a waiting list of over 120 bears worldwide that people wanted to buy. And I have to be honest, I honored every single request. It took me ages to get through them, but because some people were very specific about the kind of bear they wanted, the colors, etc. So, and of course, I make stories up for each bear when I sell it. And thankfully, the stories keep coming, which is good. But when I then post the bears out, I continue the story. And I do like, because of my previous role as a therapist, I do like to deal sometimes with my bears with mental health issues as well. I was featured in a New Zealand mental health online magazine a couple of years ago. And subsequently, I got a lot of requests from New Zealand, people asking me, can you do me a bipolar bear? And can you do me a bear with borderline personality disorder? And of course, I totally obliged because that's what people asked me for, and that was what gave them comfort. But I have had requests of people with anxiety who take their bear with them in the car to give them comfort and courage. I've had a mother ask me to knit a bear for her teenage son who was quite suicidal. And she had a deal with him. She bought a bear for herself and her son liked it. And the deal was that if he feels in a really, really bad place and he can't verbalize it, but needs his mum to put his bear in the kitchen on the table. And that's what they did between mother and son. And I was so thrilled about that. I've had other people who wanted bears for their younger siblings because they suffer anxiety and they were bullied at school, and the bear gave them comfort. So anything like that is really music to my ears, because I have a big investment in mental health as well, despite not being it anymore.
That is truly incredible, because you took it up for your own mental health in the first place, didn't you? And yet it's having such an important effect in touching so many different people's lives.
Yeah, it's important. I mean, if I can make any difference in people's lives in a small way, then that's important. I mean, my Depop shop actually says that the bears are not for children, they're for grown-ups. And they are meant for people, when they receive them, to make themselves a cup of tea, sit back and reflect, just reflect on their life and where they are in life. I'll literally send a message with my bear saying, just make yourself a cup of tea or coffee and just have a moment, have that moment for yourself. Think about where you're going. Remember that you once were a child and you were playful. Where's that playfulness gone in your life as a grown-up? Maybe get some of that back in your life. And that's why the bears are so important, because I want people to not just have a smile on their face when they look at the bears, but also to remember who they are. I want them to ground themselves and get in touch with themselves again. And that's really important. And, of course, as an ex-therapist, this is when Martin was still alive, I woke up one day with this craziest idea, and I actually told Martin first. This is probably... It was in this... The book came out in the same year he died. He came... I told him in the first week in January, the year he died, in 2017, and by mid-February, the book was out. I wrote it in 6 weeks. I just had this crazy idea that I want to do a therapeutic teddy bear storybook for grown-ups. And I hired a photographer for 2 hours. And before he came in at the door, I said to him, I'm giving you this job. It's a little bit out there. It's a bit crazy, but you need to promise me not to laugh, because there's a serious story behind it. And I had bears with plasters and tin cans and knives and self-harming. And I had a bear on my lawn with huge sunglasses who had seasonal affective disorder. I had a hoarding bear. I had a stressed out bear. I had a bear with abandonment issues and a bereaved bear. I had, you know, sort of 16 different stories, all with mental health issues. And it was definitely meant for grown-ups. So Martin and his brother Daniel helped me get that book out there, self-published. And it got out in time for Mental Health Awareness Week that year.
That's wonderful. How marvellous.
It's just a crazy idea. But all the stories are actually true stories. Most of my children volunteered their stories. Martin actually, one of the bears called Oliver in the book, is Martin's coming out story, because that's a difficult issue for so many people, how to tell your family and friends that you're gay. And that was one of the stories in the book.
Oh, wow. So his legacy really does live on in so many ways.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, I believe since you lost Martin that your bears took a new significance and became peace bears, and
yes,
that they have travelled all over the world, and you've been to New Zealand following the attack in Christchurch and left bears there. It's really quite amazing how this idea has taken off.
Yeah, it's a bit like the Manchester working bee. The Manchester bee is a symbol of Manchester. I mean, I have one here on my wrist. And the worker bee has been a symbol of Manchester for many, well, hundreds of years, really, as a busy working town with cotton mills, etc. But since the arena attack, they took on an additional role as a sign of, a symbol of solidarity and unity. And similar with the bears, I felt that the bears, after Martin died, because I feel the world needs peace and unity, I wanted to send my bears out in the name of peace and unity, and hence the peace bears were sent out all over. And then I went to Christchurch, New Zealand, 3 months after they had the attack with the shootings at the two mosques. I took four bears with me. I took two for each of them, one for each of the mosques. I took one for the mayoress of Christchurch, who did an excellent job looking after people there. And I took one to be passed on to Jacinda Ardern as well. I also took bears to the Boston Marathon when we went with Andy Burnham about 3 years ago. I gave a few bears to some of the survivors of the Boston Marathon attack. I also took some bears to some of the children who lost parents at the 9/11 attack in New York. And Kate and William have a bear each. So I do give a lot of my bears out to significant people who've really made a difference in my life in the last 5 years, or 4.5 years, as a thank you, but also as an appreciation that they are on board with peace and unity.
Wow, it's so powerful, really, Fegan, that these tiny little symbols of hope can mean so much to people. I believe one bear in particular by the name of Jordan is rather well travelled in his message of peace.
Can I just bring him?
Is he with you? Wonderful.
So this is Jordan Bear.
Oh, wow.
he travels everywhere with his face mask. He's very COVID alert aware, and he's got his own passport. Let's see if I can find it. He travels everywhere with his toothbrush. Here's his passport.
Oh, fantastic. That's superb.
So that's his passport. He's got his little, he's got his sunglasses for when he travels in hot countries. And he's got his hat when it's a bit cold. And he's got his toothbrush and toothpaste.
Oh, that's the tiniest toothbrush I've ever seen.
So yeah, he does like traveling, and he's actually, I'm looking for somebody who might go abroad soon. He can also be very smart in his dinner jacket. You know, he's not always traveling around rough. But yeah, he, I left him. So what happened is about 6 months, 4 months after Martin died, there was an award ceremony in London from Attitude magazine. Now, Martin loved freelance writing for some online magazines and news. He did the odd news article. So he used to love writing for them. And they contacted us saying they give out 10 awards every year. They'd like to give Martin one of the awards. Would we come and pick it up? So because I like to photograph my bears when I sell them in all different places, I took this bear with me and thought, oh, I'll photograph him at the dinner table. And when we got there, to our horror, it was such a posh function with celebrities and waiters everywhere watching us. I felt too embarrassed to take the bear out. So on the train back from London, I suddenly had this desire to go to the food person on the train and get a brown paper bag. And I wrote on it, I'm Jordan Bear. I was knitted by Martin Head's mum. Martin died at the arena attack. His mum wants to see how far I can travel. Please don't keep me for more than a few days and pass me on. And somebody picked him up from the train, took him to a hotel in Manchester, passed him on the day after to a lady who lives in South Wales. She then took him to Mexico on holiday, then in the hotel in Mexico, passed him on to an American lady. And that then ended up with him staying about 3-4 months in North America. He's been to many states there. And people posted lots of photographs. He's got his own Facebook page. And yeah, he keeps traveling. So I have normally got a waiting list of people wanting to take him, but then COVID got in the way. So he's recently had the chance to be in San Francisco as a fluke experience, but he's not been away since then. So he's looking for somewhere to go.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. And again, he travels in the name of peace. You know, it's important.
Yes, peace and understanding, and the fact that we're all human beings at the end of the day, aren't we?
Absolutely. And of course, Philip Schofield and Holly Willoughby took him to Portugal on a holiday and very sadly introduced him to alcohol. So
oh dear.
He had quite a boozy week's holiday with them by the sound of it. So yeah, no, but he was on stage with Michael Ball and gosh, can't think of the guy's name.
Was it Alfie Bow?
Alfie Bow, that's right, yeah. So he was on stage with them. So, yeah, he's been about a bit, but he loves travelling.
How amazing. That's incredible. Well, I shall include a link to his Facebook page in the show notes for this so people can see Jordan for themselves and where he's been on his amazing travels.
Thank you.
Did you have any idea when you put him in that paper bag on that train what would happen?
Absolutely not. I can't believe he keeps coming back home safely. And some people are really anxious when they have him and won't let him out of their sight. A friend of mine took him to Iceland and she was petrified that he gets damaged or lost. You know, his precious cargo. So anyway, he's precious to me anyway, although he's quite thin now and he's already had people get liposuction. He had the opposite 2-3 times, so I have to keep stuffing him and fattening him up. But there you go.
Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, well, what a lovely note on which I think we should draw our conversation to a close. But Fegan, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And thank you for speaking so openly about your son, about the experience you've been through, and also about the amazing work that you're doing and the power of knitting.
It's absolutely, I'll recommend it for anybody. Thank you so much.
My thanks again to Fegan for finding the time to speak to me for Making Stitches and for speaking so openly about her experiences. I've included links in the show notes to Fegan's website, as well as a link to Jordan the Bear's Facebook page. I believe that this week he's headed off on his first trip of 2022, and he was on his way to Dubai. Regular listeners may remember that last summer I spoke to Martin's sister, Louise, about how crochet and other crafts had helped her deal with her emotions following her brother's death. If you'd like to listen back to that episode, you can hear our chat in episode 28. And that's all for this episode of Making Stitches and the end of series 4 of the podcast. I'm off now to find some more inspiring makers to speak to. But in the meantime, do please make sure you subscribe to the podcast or follow it on your podcast app of choice, where you can find all the previous episodes. And if you follow Making Stitches podcast on social media, that'll help you keep up to date and you won't miss the beginning of the new series when it arrives. Thank you so much for listening, and I very much look forward to sharing some more inspiring maker stories with you again soon. Until then, stay safe and enjoy your crafting.